just got a Maverick-sized stamp of approval.
She totally did, Leighton agrees with a smile.
Earl licks my hand and meows, clearly sick of me not petting him anymore. I lean back, fighting a grin. 5 minutes later, he's not too happy with me when Leighton shoos him off my lap so I can help her carry all the newly washed and folded baby items to the nursery. Quinn, knowing she'd be pressing her luck if she got off the couch since she's ready to pop, doesn't come.
You seem happy, Leighton muses in the nursery.
I am, I confirm with a smile. I haven't said it, but I'm really happy that you and Clay are together. It's not just that he's good for you. You're good for him. He's always been super private about his personal life, but I hope you know that both Quinn and I are here for you if you ever just want to talk to your girls about things. I respect the fact that you might never do that, too, just so you know. We might be nosy, but Mav wasn't wrong.
I'll keep that in mind, Lee.
A little advice from one girl who fell for a Davis to another. Just don't ever tell Quinn about your sex life, or you'll never hear the end of it. That girl is as weird as it gets when she finds out about that stuff.
I chuckle.
Noted. Don't ever tell Quinn how good her brother is. My eyes widen when I realize what I just said.
What are the chances you'll forget that?
I ask Lee. Her whole belly moves as she laughs softly.
Not even a little bit. But don't worry. I won't say a word. I've got a cowboy of my own, so I know how to keep quiet.
When we go back into the living room, Quinn is asleep on the couch, and Earl is curled up in a tiny space between her belly and thighs. A large cat, some breed Leighton called a Maine Coon, there's no way he can be comfortable with his back half hanging off the couch, but he's purring away regardless.
I'm going to let y'all rest and head home, I tell Lee, feeling my heart skip a beat at the idea of home being the ranch.
I promised Clayton today I'd finally let him teach me how to ride. I give her a hug, promising to call later, and walk out to my car. It'd be quicker if I knew the four-wheeler trails, but I don't mind the short drive. It's hard not to love it when every turn gives me the most beautiful views of Pine Oaks backcountry. Miles and miles of green pastures. Every stretch of the road on the Davis property is lined with a stark white fence. Clayton explained that when his father had been running things, they had cattle roaming their lands. The Davises raised some of the best, but it was a business Clayton never saw for the future of the ranch. Since they no longer use the majority of their land for cattle, they farm out unused parts of those pastures for hay so that they can gain that resource for the horses. Clayton tells me he owns pastures that have some of the best views in all of Texas, but since you have to travel by horse to get there, I haven't seen those yet. He's been working so hard to get me comfortable around the big beasts, but there's just something about those huge black eyes watching your every move that makes me uneasy. I honk at Drew, the ranch foreman, when I see him working on one of the fence rails near the turnoff from Maverick and Lee's road onto ours. He pulls his hat off and waves it in the air before wiping his brow and bending back over to continue his work. Not far after that, I see two other hands do the same, and I give them a honk of my horn as well. Right before the turn into the ranch house, I see a few cows in the distance, smack dab in the middle of the road. The rancher who owns the land on the other side of the road has so many head of cattle, they're always dotting the landscape. But this is the first time I've seen wayward cattle making a break for it. I continue down our drive, reaching for my phone and my purse. I pull up Clayton's number and give him a call, climbing out of the car while it rings.
Lenny?
He answers in that deep way of his that's almost breathy but too manly to be called such. The sound goes straight through me, bathing my whole body in warmth.
Hey, honey.
I smile into the bright sun, walking up the porch steps and into the house. I know you're busy, but I wanted to let you know some of the Larkins' cows are making a break for it. I saw them when I was turning in farther down the road.
I'll give Todd a call.
I figured you would. Are you going to be home for supper tonight? I can only imagine how tired he is, seeing that he left before sunup this morning to deliver some horses to a buyer out in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
He made it sound like no big deal, but I can't imagine making a 5-plus-hour drive one way and not being wiped by the time I got home.
I should be at the ranch in about an hour, darling. Why don't we head into town for something?
Are you sure you don't want to just have a relaxing night at home? You've been on the road all day. He laughs.
No, I want to take my girlfriend out. Might not be as fancy as what we'd get if we drive into Dallas, but I don't take you out enough as it is.
Clayton, I say with a smile, you know I don't need all that. And I don't. I know he's busy with things at the ranch, and his hours are long and taxing. I don't want him working his tail off all day, only to get home and think I need him to take me out in order to show me a good time. All I want is to be near him. There are no distractions when you're getting undivided one-on-one time.
I know, darling, but I'm still feeling the itch to show you off.
I roll my eyes, walking through the house toward the stairs so I can go get ready now that it looks like we're not going to be staying in. I was just visiting over at Maverick and Leighton's. I know Quinn is on bed rest, but why don't you give Tate a call and see if he'll okay a trip to town for dinner? I'll ring Lee and see if she and Maverick want to join. They don't have much time left before the babies are here. As much as I love our time with just the two of us, I think we should have a family dinner before the little ones come. A noise comes over the line that makes me pause in pulling off my leggings.
I like hearing you refer to them as family.
Well, they are your family, Clayton. What else would I call them? I laugh awkwardly.
And seeing as we're building our future, they're yours too, Lenny.
Clayton, I gulp.
Don't go saying my name like that when I'm too far away to do something about it. One day soon, we're going to sit down and talk so you know exactly what I see for us down the road, and I can make sure you don't have any doubts as to where I'm standing. Get ready, baby. I'll be home soon.
He hangs up before I can say anything else, but since he's rendered me speechless, that's just fine with me. I'm not stupid. I know he wouldn't have moved me into his home if he didn't see a future for us, but knowing how his last relationship ended, I worry he might not want the same things for his life as I do for mine. A family. There isn't much in this world that would make me willingly give up what I have with Clayton Davis, but the fact that he doesn't want kids might just be one of them, which is the very reason I've been dreading the moment he wanted to have this talk. What will I do if he only changes how he feels about marriage, but not children? Can I stay with a man who can only give me his love, but not his babies? I'm honestly not sure. 15. Caroline. Tennessee Whiskey by Chris Stapleton.
Would you stop? Quinn snaps, yanking her husband's plate back toward her so she can continue to pick off it, having already polished off her food. Do you want to be the reason your child starves, Starch?
He smirks, his handsome face more boyish than those of the other men at our table. If I wasn't already tumbling head over heels for a certain dark cowboy, I might find Tate Montgomery attractive. He shrugs, and I hear Leighton snicker from across the round table. My gaze moves to her, and she winks before mouthing something about waiting for it. I frown in confusion before she points to the two Montgomerys.
Grease, there's no way my baby is starving in there,
he jokes, pointing to her very big stomach. I know he meant it harmlessly, but judging by the expression on Quinn's beautiful face, she doesn't feel the same way.
Now don't go looking at me like that, Quinn. You know that's not what I meant.
Oh, really? She asks, crossing her arms over her chest, which is no easy feat, seeing as she's top-heavy and belly-heavy.
You know I love your body,
Tate tells her sincerely, but she doesn't stop leveling him with a glare. You mean the body that keeps growing as big as a house, keeping your baby from starving because I'm storing food in there for him or something? Tate looks up at the ceiling, and I hear Leighton chuckle a little louder.
Give it a break, Hellraiser,
Maverick mumbles around a fork full of barbecue.
You know damn well he didn't mean what you're implying. Just because you're in a shit mood, don't take it out on your man.
He's the one who put me in jail.
This time, Leighton doesn't keep her hilarity down.
She starts laughing so hard, I can't stop watching her belly with worry that she's shaking her baby up in there. Surely it's not good for it to move that much. He didn't put you in jail, Q. Don't be such a drama queen. Quinn turns her narrowed eyes at Leighton. You aren't the one stuck talking to herself while her husband is off playing inside other women's vaginas. My eyes widen and I feel my cheeks heat as heads start turning in our direction. Maverick has his fork frozen halfway to his mouth, staring at his sister in shock. Lee is hooting even louder now. Tate, having clearly heard this many times, just looks down at his plate with a smirk. When I look up at Clayton, he's wearing the same expression as his brother. I try to ignore the stares as Quinn continues to grumble about her vagina-poking husband, but it's almost impossible when it feels like the whole place can't take their eyes off our table. I'm used to the curious looks when I'm out with Clayton, or even the girls, but they're never as bad as when all six of us are together. When you factor in Quinn's shameless way of saying whatever is on her mind, it really does feel like we're on display.
You get used to it,
Maverick grumbles, and I look to my right to see him studying me with understanding.
Took me a while when I got back to Pine Oak. I forgot what it was like to live in a town where everyone treated other people's lives like a soap opera.
How do you ignore the stares? He shrugs.
You just stop caring what they think. Only person whose opinion matters to me is my wife's. They're going to think what they want regardless of the truth, so you might as well just pretend they don't exist.
But doesn't it bother you when you hear them talking about you and it's not true? His mouth moves, not into a full smile, but it's not a hard line anymore.
They're not ever going to spread the truth when they can stretch it and fill in the less interesting parts with lies. You just live your life and make sure you keep yourself happy. The rest of that shit can go to hell.
I lean back in my chair and look around. Just like Maverick, everyone eating with us is oblivious to the stares from the tables surrounding us in the packed restaurant. Just like when we were at the pie hole or even grabbing groceries, people have no qualms about gawking. The Davis family is Pine Oak royalty, so it shouldn't be a shock. But for someone like me, who isn't used to it, it's a struggle. I never did look at the attention with such an untroubled and relaxed mindset as Maverick does, though. In my mind, I'm still afraid of what they think, but in reality, what does it matter? I've got a great man, his family welcomes me with open arms, and other than the uncertainty of where I'll reopen the sequel, life is perfect. I turn to see Clayton regarding me in silence and feel the last tiny part of unease fall to the wayside. A wide smile forms on my face, and I direct all the newfound freedom I feel at him. It's his affections, after all, that have shown me how to complete the puzzle inside of me, that have allowed me to finally shed the past and start living. The chatter at our table fades away when I see his eyes flash. I know we haven't said those three special words, but when he gives me this unguarded focus, I have no doubts that they're there. I never stood a chance at keeping my heart from him. Not when he makes me feel like nothing is impossible. Hey! Earth to the lovebirds! Quinn yells across the table, breaking the moment with her snapping fingers. Did you tell her yet?
Shut up, Quinny!
Clayton scolds, frowning at his sister. What? She glances around, taking a bite of her husband's sandwich. You didn't say it was some big secret. What are you talking about? I ask. Clayton sighs, glaring at her a second longer before turning to look at me.
I planned to surprise you later, but since my sister has a mouth the size of Texas, might as well do it now.
Oh, come on! You didn't tell me not to say anything! How was I supposed to know?
I don't know, Quinn. Maybe because I said don't tell Lenny so I can make sure it's what she wants before you get excited?
She waves a hand in the air. Potato, potato, big brother. Clayton sighs but smiles at his sister. Well, now that you two got that out of the way, how about one of you spill the beans so everyone else, including Caroline, can know what's going on? Lee jokes.
I have a place that I think would be great for the sequel,
Clayton tells me. Of all the things I thought he'd say,
That didn't even cross my mind. My heart picks up as happiness fills me to the point of bursting with the knowledge that, even with how busy he's been looking for something better than the Jordan's place next to the salon.
Really? I gasp with excitement.
The building next to Davis Auto Works went up for sale a few years back. We bought it with plans to either use it for storage or expand, but never really had time to deal with either. I think you'll find it's perfect, but I wanted to run it by Quinn before I said anything. The last time we talked about it, we'd decided that DAW didn't need anything bigger, and the setup we have now for storage works. I had every intention of listing it, but never got around to it. Feels like one of those meant-to-be things, sweetness.
He explains with a shrug of his shoulders, downplaying just how huge this actually is.
You want me to buy it from you? I question, excitement bubbling through me even more. I'd love to see the space, but I trust you, given that it's in my budget and all.
His face gets soft and he gives me his knee-weakening grin.
Lenny, you think I'm going to take a single penny from you? You've lost your mind.
Clearly seeing the argument forming, he raises a hand and closes it over my mouth.
Another one of those things we're building, darling. The sequel is a part of you, and you are a part of me. You get that fire bubbling over the teacup, and I'm going to have fun showing you another way to toss that sass around.
My mouth moves, but he doesn't take his hand away, so the words just come out garbled.
You going to let me do this if you like the space?
I shake my head and narrow my eyes.
You need me to love you bad and change your answer?
He smarts off with a low rumble of his voice, eyes dancing with amusement. I pause long enough to show him that I'm not unaffected by that in the least. He throws back his head, a booming laugh rocking his body before he drops his hand. You are not giving me a building, I finally say when he quiets down. You can't just give someone something as big as a building and think that's okay. He leans toward me till we're nose to nose and effectively kills any chance I had at arguing logic with him.
Caroline Michaels, you gave me back a life worth living. The way I see it, a building isn't even close to big enough to make us even.
Everyone laughs when I lean back in my chair and shut my mouth. Even being the butt of their laughter, I don't feel the old feelings of nervous unease. Not now. All I feel is contentment so deep in my bones, I don't think I'll ever be afraid of my own shadow again. I'm finally living a life free of trepidation and wild with adoration. Who would have thought that one night with a dark cowboy would heal my soul of fear? I'm still riding the high of having my own space 30 minutes later when we leave the restaurant, Clayton and I following the other two couples. His arm is over my shoulders, pressing me tight to his side as we walk. I have one behind his back and one resting against his abs. When we stop next to his truck, I lift the hand off his stomach and bring it to his neck, pulling him down and pressing my mouth to his. He doesn't pause, deepening our kiss instantly. I hear the others talking as they move to their vehicles, but don't pull away. When Clayton turns to us and moves my front to press more firmly against his, with both his hands on my bottom, I smile against his mouth and lift my head to look up at him.
What was that for?
He asks, his voice thick with the same pleasure I feel shooting through me. Thank you, I answer simply. His expression changes into one that makes my heart pick up speed. He's gazing down at me like I just gave him the world in the palm of my hand. His eyes are shining bright, the swirls of green so luminous that they look like the clearest emerald stone. His whole face is smiling. One hand leaves my butt, grabs the hand not holding his neck, and pulls it to his chest. His heartbeat hits my palm with a frantic tempo as his gaze holds mine. I open my mouth to give him every last piece of me, but before I can, the magical moment is shattered. I hear my name called in a vile tone that belongs to one woman and one woman alone. Only, unlike the last time, I don't feel the same panic that had me bolting. Not with Clayton's arms safely enveloping me.
Well, well. Looks like some things never change. Left town a whore and came back as one.
At least you're moving up in the world now that you've wrangled a Davis man.
I can hear the slur in her voice, but I don't let that excuse her behavior. She'd say the same thing if she were sober.
What the fuck did you just say?
Clayton seethes angrily.
I'm talking to my daughter, not you. No, you're talking to my Caroline, not yours. She isn't anything to you.
Since I haven't turned yet, I see Quinn and Leighton with their husbands gaping at the scene my mother is creating. When I look up at Clayton, his rage making the muscles in his jaw clench and jump, I frame his face in my hands and force him to look away from Misty Michaels. I need to do this without you acting like my shield, honey. I see the refusal on the tip of his tongue, but shake my head before he can voice it. I need this to finally move on. His chest swells with a deep breath, and I know it costs him, but he nods sharply. I turn, his grip only loosening enough to allow me to face her before tightening again. He'll give me his silence and allow me to fight my own battle here, but that doesn't mean he won't make his support known. I address her in a strong and clear voice. What do you want? She sneers at me, teeth bared, making her weathered face look as evil as I know her to be.
That's no way to speak to your mother.
You're right, I agree, but you stopped being that a long time ago. So I'll ask you again, Misty. What do you want? Her head jerks back as her scowl deepens.
You little ungrateful bitch.
Clayton's arm spasms, and I know he's close to losing his mind. I reach behind and pat his thigh. I can see a small crowd forming near the restaurant's entrance, but I don't care that people are openly gawking. I'm not going back to the woman who was afraid of what they thought. I'm not the one in the wrong here. I'm waiting. Say what you need to, but no, this is the only chance I'll allow you the freedom of doing so.
I should have had the doctor suck you out of me the second he told me I was pregnant. Now I'm stuck with my whore daughter and her disrespectful tongue. You should be thanking me for keeping you.
I lean my head against Clayton's chest and laugh.
You have some nerve calling me a whore when you can't even recall who knocked you up in the first place.
I lower my voice, not wanting the whole town to know by morning what I say next. I've been with two men in my life, Misty. One who almost broke me because I was naive enough to think he could follow through on his promise to help me get away, and one who healed me after the first did his best to ruin what you hadn't already. Seeing that the latter is also going to be the last man I give myself to, I'd say I'm pretty daggum close to sainthood. You want to believe I'm a whore? Then you do so. But when I crawl into bed at night with the man I love with every fiber of my being, I'm gonna do that knowing that my life is finally perfect, and your opinion no longer matters. I watch the woman who gave birth to me, the same one who never gave me any love afterward, sputter in shock. I've never spoken back to her. I didn't when I was growing up, still under the impression that I wanted and needed her love. I didn't when I was a teenager, seeking out the wrong company in an attempt to fill the void she created. And I didn't when I begged her to save me. I carried the burden I felt with her inability to care about me for nearly 30 years. But no more. Never again. Do me a favor, I finally say when she continues to look confused that I'm not breaking under her verbal abuse. Pretend you had that abortion. When you see me, Clayton, or anyone else in our family, act like we're invisible. Look right through us, Misty, because we're going to do the same to you. I turn awkwardly in Clayton's stiff grasp and hug my arms around him. I can feel the power of his fury in the tension-filled muscles that are flexed hard. I ignore her, hoping she'll just leave. With my cheek against his chest, I hear her attempt to speak up.
Shut your goddamn mouth.
Clayton rumbles venom-filled words that seem to explode from deep in his gut.
You don't want to find out what happens if you continue this, Misty. Don't fuck with me. because I will end you if you even so much as think about my Caroline.
I squeeze him tighter, not in fear or panic over the confrontation with the woman who used to make me feel those things, but to reassure him that I'm fine. When he finally relaxes his body slightly, I know she's left. I keep hugging him for another second until I feel a little more tension leave his body. Only then do I look up at him.
It feels good to forget,
I whisper, knowing he understands what I'm saying when his anger vanishes instantly. I'd thought he was speaking out of his ear when he explained how he moved on from his own mama's hurt, but not anymore. She'll never deserve my forgiveness, so I'm going to forget her instead, just like he did his.
Guys?
Clayton turns us together at Quinn's voice. She looks over the bed of his truck and gives a tiny wave. I scan the other three people at her side and frown when I get to her husband's pale face.
I don't mean to interrupt what I'm sure was about to get interesting and all, seeing that you just admitted you love my big brother at the same time you put your mama in her place so brilliantly, but my water broke 5 minutes ago, and my vagina-poking husband has seemed to forget every year of medical school because I'm not sure he's breathing anymore.
16. Clayton. The Fighter by Keith Urban and Carrie Underwood. Any news? Caroline asks, handing me the coffee that she got from the cafeteria. Nothing since the last time Tate came out and said she was about to start pushing. That was almost 3 hours ago, Lenny. She grabs my free hand and gives it a squeeze. These things take some time, honey. She's in good hands. I know you're worried. I hate knowing she's hurting. God, just the thought of my baby sister, someone I spent my whole life, until she married Tate, protecting with everything in me, being in pain, cuts me deep. I glance over at Maverick, seeing the same worry etched in his face. I can only imagine his is amplified because his wife will be in the same position soon. It's too soon, I finally whisper, feeling fear claw at me. She's only 4 weeks early, Clayton. I know they had her on bed rest, but they told her they wouldn't stop labor if she went early. They just wanted to give her as much time as they could. They're both going to be fine. My hand shakes as I lift my coffee and take a sip of the black brew. I lean forward in my seat, elbows to knees, and hold the cup in both hands. This is why I crave control. Knowing what will happen, how I can manipulate situations to ensure the outcome I find most favorable, and avoid anything that can cause harm. There isn't shit I can do except let God's will work, and it's tearing me apart. How about we talk about what happened back in the parking lot of Pitts? Caroline offers in a soft voice. Just thinking about what happened after supper makes me burn with a whole new rush of conflicting emotions. I'm so fucking proud of her for standing up to her mama, but I hate that she ever had to. I've never wanted to harm a woman before, but Misty has me itching to ruin her. Lenny, I tell her softly. I knew from her violent reaction months ago, from just hearing her mama call her name, that her childhood wasn't a good one. I don't want her reliving that just because she thinks she has to give me more. I know I don't have to, but it's important to me that you know what I said was true, that what she thinks of me isn't what I am. I turn my head, not moving from my hunched position. You think I could ever think of you like that? She shrugs, picking at her coffee cup. I spent my whole life thinking that just because she thought I was a whore, I must have been. It's why I never really dated, until John, that is. I didn't dress provocatively or give people a reason to think that, so as I got older, I realized it was just another way for her to make sure I knew my place in her life. She takes a deep breath. I'm sure you realize after that confrontation that I was far from planned. She hadn't wanted to stick to Pine Oak, but when she got pregnant with me, there was never a chance she'd make it to some big city and be discovered. Her words, not mine. I have no idea why she kept me, but she did. And because of that, she blames me for ruining her grand plans. And your father? I question, sitting up and turning toward her. She shakes her head, but when her eyes connect with mine, I see the clearness within them. They no longer hold pain, hurt, or care regarding her upbringing. She never knew who he was. She had a different man every week while I was living with her, I don't imagine it was any different leading up to her getting pregnant. It doesn't bother you? It used to. I think that's just another reason I desperately sucked up any attention John gave me back then. He was the first boy who paid me any mind, and when he promised me a way out from under her thumb, I took it. And I continued to take it because I believed that was all I deserved. "Darling," I mumble, wrapping my arm around her and pulling her closer, needing that contact. "I don't feel that way anymore," she continues meekly. "I know now that I was stuck mentally, believing all the garbage she projected onto me. I might still have times when I get uneasy or shy over too much attention, but it's not like it was then. You have no idea what you've given me, all because you pushed me to look past that fear and explore something I didn't dream I could have." This woman brings me to my knees. Watching her become stronger each day has been nothing short of humbling. I don't need her. I never did. I'm the person I am now because I was too strong for her to break me. I survived her. I survived him. And now, I'm being gifted you. I meant what I told her, Clayton. Until the day comes that you might not want me, you'll be the last one I give myself to. All of me. I'm yours. I open my mouth to tell her just how much that means to me and how she's out of her fucking mind if she ever thinks that day would come. But before I can, there's a commotion that pulls my attention away from her. "I'm a daddy!" Tate bellows with a huge smile, his chest heaving as he stands in the middle of the waiting room with his hands on his hips. I turn back to Caroline, but she shakes her head with a nod toward Tate. "Later. We'll finish this later, honey." Knowing she's right, but hating that she has, twice now, given me the words that prove how much she cares for me without me returning them doesn't feel right. I need to wait to tell the woman who stole my heart weeks ago that I love her when I can take the time to prove it. And as much as I dislike it, that isn't now. I fucking hope she can see the truth in my eyes. I bend toward her and kiss her quickly before standing and grabbing her hand at the same time. We both walk over to Tate, Maverick, and Lee already at his side. "He's perfect," Tate says with a beaming smile. Realizing that my sister just gave me a nephew, I feel like someone punched me in the chest. She's the strongest woman I know. Thought that before, but after witnessing her bringing our son into the world, I know just how true that is.
"A boy,"
Leighton exclaims. She looks up at Maverick.
"A boy, Mav."
"Heard Tate, darling," he answers, his voice thick with emotion. When he looks at me, I see the same overwhelming emotions I'm feeling in his gaze. I swallow what feels like a golf ball and nod. Mav's eyes close and I clench my jaw, but somehow we both manage to get a hold of ourselves. But fuck, it takes one hell of an effort for me to keep from crying like a goddamn baby. I'm so happy for our sister that I feel like I might combust. I can't believe my baby sister is a mama. "Y'all ready to meet your nephew?" Tate asks, looking every bit the proud papa he is. I keep Caroline's hand firmly in mine while we all follow Tate down the hallway. We wait while he pops into Quinn's hospital room to make sure she's decent, but not even a second later he's back and ushering us in. Leighton is first, moving as fast as she can. If I wasn't feeling like I was about to break down and cry, I'd find her waddling that quick, funny as hell. Mav follows, stopping to slap Tate's shoulder in silent support. "Go on, honey," Caroline urges when I don't move from my spot in the hallway. Before stepping into the room, I release her hand and pull Tate forward. His hug in return is just as tight as mine. "Congratulations, Tate."
"Thanks, Clay. Means a lot."
There's so much I want to tell the man who broke my sister's heart years ago, but I release him and nod instead. He's made her happy since coming back to Pine Oak, and that's all I've ever wanted for Quinn. Lee is bawling her head off when we step into the dimly lit hospital room, looking down at Quinn as she smiles at the bundle in her arms. When I look over her shoulder and see my brother finally lose the war over his emotions with wet cheeks and a warm smile, I stop trying to hold mine in and suck in a heavy, choppy breath. Quinn glances up from her son and smiles at me, her chin wobbling like crazy.
"Come meet him," she requests softly. My vision gets blurry, and I step to the side of her bed and get my first glance at the next generation of our family. He's an impatient one, but healthy as can be, with lungs stronger than you've ever heard. Doc checked him over and said that for being a month early, he's perfect. Quinn lays him down on her thighs, tucking the blanket around his tiny chin to give us a better look at the baby who looks like the spitting image of his parents. Grayson Ford Montgomery just couldn't wait to meet the best family in the whole wide world. He's perfect, Caroline whispers, and I squeeze her hand. Oh, Q, Lee cries softly. He's the most handsome thing I've ever seen. Did good, Quinny. Did real good. My sister looks from Mav when he finishes speaking and blinks up at me with watery eyes. I reach out, roll my fingertip across Grayson's tiny forehead, and take a rough pull of air into my lungs. His lips purse and his nose scrunches, but his eyes stay shut. So proud of you, Quinn, I finally mutter, unable to resist my new nephew's silky smooth skin and caressing his cheek with my fingertip again. Here, she chokes on a tiny sob, lifting her son up toward me. Caroline jerks her hand away, but with the tiny life being placed into my arms, I don't dare look and see if I can read what's going through her mind. The second I'm holding the seemingly weightless bundle, I never want to give it up. Feelings so foreign to me are hitting hard. Jesus, Quinn, I breathe, staring down at Grayson. I know, Clay. I know. He isn't even my own son, and I already know I'd protect this child with everything I have in me. Knowing that, I can't even fathom how a parent could ever feel anything but unconditional love. I don't have to guess that both my brother and sister are thinking the same thing. We might not have had a mama who cared, or a father who could until it was too late. But this boy, and any children born into our family, will never know that kind of pain. He's got two parents who love each other and will love him fiercely. But he's also got two uncles and the women in their lives who will do the same. I bend at the same time I lift my arms up and press my lips to Grayson's tiny head before handing him back to his mama. When I'm finally able to look away and at Caroline, I'm not sure how to read what I see in her eyes. For as long as I can remember, I've known I'd never bring a child of my own into the world. The way I'd been raised hadn't shown me anything positive in the way of having my own children. Looking at the woman, I can't imagine a life without, with the reminder of what my nephew felt like in my arms, makes me want to be able to see something other than what I've always believed.
17. Caroline. Sunday Morning by Parmalee. I climb into bed and pull the covers up over my bare legs. I can hear Clayton as he moves through the house, locking up and setting the alarm. He's been quiet since we left the hospital. To be honest, I'm glad for the silence. Watching him holding Quinn and Tate's son shifted something inside of me, something I hadn't been sure was there, something I hadn't even been sure I had even wanted until I met Clayton. Knowing his past, I was completely unsure if the man I was building a future with wanted the same thing. Children. I never thought about that for myself. Why would I? I was raised by a woman who hated me, hardly tolerated me, and had been one of the main reasons I desperately traded one nightmare for another. I went from living with her hate to just surviving another's. I never would have brought a child into that. Luckily, John had been meticulous about protection, and I had never had to deal with that problem. I've never experienced the positive love of a mother, and I'm not sure that's something I'm capable of. But seeing Clayton with a baby in his arms and a look of pure, tender love, I started to hope. I know, though, that if that's something Clayton doesn't want, I will never have it, because there will never be another man for me. My heart only belongs to one man, and without him, I'll never bring a child into this world. Knowing that, it feels like a dark cloud has settled over a special night.
I could hear you thinking downstairs, Lenny.
I jump at the sound of Clayton's voice, so lost in my thoughts I didn't even notice him enter the bedroom. He starts unbuttoning his plaid button-down, pulling it off and grabbing the white undershirt he had on underneath and yanking it off, too.
His belt clanks on the floor in the silence after he toes his boots off, and then, in one fluid motion, he's got his jeans and boxer briefs off. I don't look away when he straightens and hooks his hands at his hips, studying me with silent consideration.
We've got two choices, sweetness.
His brow is furrowed, but other than that, he appears calm. I know my dark cowboy better than that, though. He's holding his control close to his chest.
We can either finish what we were talking about in the waiting room earlier, or...
He looks down, shakes his head, and, with a heavy breath, glances back at me.
Or you can tell me what I saw in your eyes when you watched me holding my nephew.
I... Clayton. My thundering heart jumps into my throat, and I feel my lips press together tightly. He waits, but without being able to find the words I need to continue, I lift both my shoulders, silently telling him I need his guidance, because I honestly don't know if I can pick one over the other. Not when I could be getting his love in one breath and losing a piece of my heart in the next. He steps forward and rounds the bed. I track his every movement until he's standing next to my side of the bed. When his hands leave his hips, I glance down and watch with wide eyes as they both slowly come toward me. He pulls the covers from where I have them tucked into my hips, burying my legs. He makes a sound of disapproval when I start to pull the shirt of his I stole, like every night, to sleep in over my panties, halting me instantly. When he takes my ankles in his strong grip, I close my eyes, not even shocked when he pulls me gently down the bed until my back is no longer against the pillows, propped up against the headboard. Even in the heaviness of the moment, his strength is something that amazes me. His hands push between my legs at the knees and spread them to the side. Then his heavy weight blankets me. Legs between mine, hard length against my panty-covered center, and naked chest over my cotton-covered one. My hands move of their own accord to rest on his back at the same time his arms go under my shoulders, pushing his fingers into my hair and cradling my head in his hands.
"Open your eyes,"
he orders, and I do so instantly. His face hovers above mine, eyes searching but guarded. I don't have to guess what he assumed correctly I was thinking back at the hospital, but I know without a doubt that I need him to know one thing before I confirm it. "I love you," I utter on a whispered breath. I literally feel my words as they hit him, physically, as his whole body seems to grow larger and harder at once. The fingers tangled with my hair spasm. His chest pushes into mine as it puffs out, and the part of him that fills me with a beautiful pain swells against my sex. "I love you," I repeat loudly and fiercely, fueled by his reaction. This time, his eyelids droop and his forehead falls to rest against mine. That wide chest of his starts to move rapidly when his breathing speeds up. "I love you, Clayton Davis." Then his mouth is on mine, and his tongue plays with mine without pause. He kisses me so deeply that my eyes cross, and I swear I can feel the earth move. There's so much passion in this kiss. My legs come off the bed to wrap around his hips, and my arms tighten around his torso. I frantically try to get closer. We continue to pour our feelings into that kiss, both of us growing more desperate with each caress of tongues and swallowed groans. When he rips his mouth free, it takes me a moment to shake the intoxication of it off.
"It shouldn't be possible to love you as much as I do, Caroline Michaels. But every single day I feel that grow into something I reckon few ever are blessed to feel. I knew close to 4 months ago when you sat down next to me that there was something powerful between us. Had no doubts a month later that connection was something I was fooling myself into thinking I could forget about when it snapped into place. And, my sweet Linny, it wasn't long after that that I realized I was made to love you."
He shifts his grasp, his hands coming out from under my head, and his thumbs wiping the tears from my face. My whole body shudders as I suck in a wobbly breath.
"I need to know the rest, darling,"
he says with care. "I'm afraid to give you the rest, Clayton." He shakes his head, His handsome face relaxes and openly projects his affection.
Nothing should ever make you afraid, Lenny. Not when it comes to me, and damn sure not when it comes to our love. I never want you feeling the fear that keeps your thoughts from me.
My chest smooshes against him as I take a deep and calming breath. I want that, I finally admit. He holds my worried gaze, not reacting.
You want what?
What they have. I finally lose the brightness of his emerald gaze when his eyes slowly flutter closed. A rush of air fans my face a second later. I hold myself still as my heart pounds in anxious beats. Please say something, Clayton, I plead when he doesn't move or speak.
I don't want her here,
he finally says, confusing me instantly. What?
She has no place in our bed, but I also can't let you go long enough to move our talk from this spot.
Who are you talking about?
Jess.
My whole body jerks as his ex's name slams into my brain. Confusion as to why he's bringing her up now of all times blends into a hurt I feel slice deep.
God, Caroline, you're killing me.
His hips press into mine as he shifts his body to rest his elbows in the mattress.
Look at me, baby.
I hadn't realized I stopped. Looking back into his beautiful eyes again, I see the pain inside of them.
She was pregnant. Right after I finally broke things off, all her scheming paid off. When she told me, I was going to step up. In my gut, I knew I didn't want that baby, but I would have been there and done my best to give it a good life. However, I wasn't going to give her what she thought she could trick me into.
A slash of pain goes through his features as he grows heavier on top of me, and I know where he's going, hating that woman even more.
When I refused her, when she said we should get married right away, making it clear to her that would never be an option, she knew she'd miscalculated drastically. I never in my life thought she would kill my baby because of it, though.
Clayton, I gasp, moving my hands to cup his strong jaw. Honey.
It cut me to the quick, but even though I felt like a piece of my heart had been ripped out, I struggled with feeling relieved as well. It's fucked up, I know that, but with her selfishness, I wouldn't be forced to have her in my life because she had my kid.
I'm so sorry, I tell him, my tears returning.
I had a mama who couldn't love me, and a father who didn't want to until he was dying. I didn't know my grandparents. The only real love I felt was toward my brother and sister, and with them, I saw what having shit parents did to kids. I grew up knowing I didn't want to bring a life into the world without knowing I'd be capable of what my parents weren't. That didn't change when she killed my baby, Caroline. I can't explain what it felt like holding my sister's baby in my arms, but even loving that boy instantly, if I didn't have you, I would never want that for myself. You make me need everything I never wanted.
A giant sob bursts from my lips.
I told you we were going to have this talk.
He gives me a brief kiss.
I told you that what I wanted for our future would be different from what I wanted with her. I could live without anyone in this whole damn world but you. I couldn't go on without you. I'm a man who knows what he needs, Lenny. And that's you. I won't waste time when I know in my marrow that you're made for me to love. Ask me, baby. Ask me what roads we're traveling on.
What roads?
The ones that collide together and form one indestructible path. One day real damn soon, that road is going to give you my name and give us a family that will never doubt what parents' love feels like. We both had a rough start, darling, but there isn't anything we can't weather together. I knew it was time to cowboy up the second my good girl gave me her bad, and together, we made magic.
I'm crying so hard now he had to stop talking softly halfway through that. I can see his smiling face, so full of love for me, through the tears swimming in my eyes. I blink frantically, but the tears keep coming. Not even when his lips drop to mine and we drown in each other's kisses do they stop.
My sobs echo around the room as he undresses me, only slowing when he pushes himself into my body. By the time he's given me every thick inch, I finally stop crying. The passion between us is a soothing balm to my tears, which dissolve in the overpowering joy, tipping me over the edge as I lose myself in the all-consuming sensation of the man I love loving me slow. 18. Caroline. Humble and Kind by Tim McGraw. You know the old saying, when something feels too good to be true, it probably is? Well, there's no doubt to its validity in my eyes. Not after I wake up the next morning and the bubble of perfect love that had formed around Clayton and me pops. Only when Clayton wakes me up this morning with worry hanging off him like a coat and tells me there's been another fire, the tears don't come. When I call Luke and hear him confirm what Clayton told me, I just feel a sad acceptance of what that means. There's no fear, no panic. Just the knowledge that whatever follows will be okay because I have Clayton to help me find my way through it. The sequel is completely gone. What had been rebuilt and put on the market was just a pile of ash now. There's also no doubt in anyone's mind that this fire was intentional. No matter what the report said about the first one, everyone now knows that one had been as well. What we don't know, though, is why.
"Talk to me, Lenny,"
Clayton asks with a hint of desperate worry in his tone. "What do you want me to say?"
"Jesus, baby. You just found out that someone intentionally set fire to the old store, and you don't even look upset."
I shrug. I'm upset, but not because it's gone. It was just an empty space. My dreams aren't tied up in there, and my happiness is not something I can only find in the pages of the books I sold. A few months ago, this probably would have felt a lot different, but then I went exploring, and I've got a path full of something I never dreamed of. I'm stronger now, too strong to let this break me.
Buck, I love you.
A small smile forms on my lips at his words. The thing that bothers me now, even though I hate thinking that someone else might not be able to make a dream of my old space, is that I don't understand why I'm being targeted. Even though Luke said there was another fire across town at another business, I can't help but feel in my gut this is personal.
What are you thinking, darling?
I sigh, shrug, and shake my head. Do you think... could this be John? A flash of anger crosses his face.
Do you think it could be?
I honestly don't know, Clayton. The John I knew years ago wasn't a good person, but he was an angry drunk who preferred to use his words and strength to hurt someone. He wanted people to know he was powerful in that way. Hiding behind a fire doesn't make sense. I just can't see him waking up one day and deciding today is a good day to become an arsonist.
Just because he didn't show it then doesn't mean he didn't have more malicious intent hiding away and waiting to come out.
I know, but it just doesn't feel like something he'd do. If he's even still in town, he'd corner me somewhere before he'd hide behind a fire and not let me know he was the one who took more from me. The man I knew would have left no doubt it was him. Clayton drops his head, looking down at his boots. What? A little pit of unease opens in my gut when he just shakes his head. Clayton, tell me what's going through your head.
Goddamn.
Clayton grunts.
You knew him as a boy, Lenny. You don't know him as a man.
I was with him for close to 6 years. I might have started with him when he was a boy, but he was a man when I finally left.
And you haven't seen or really talked to him in close to another 5, darling. People change. And you might not know the man that he is today.
I take a calming breath, placing my palms on the counter, planting my feet on the rungs on the barstool at the kitchen island. I arch my brows at Clayton.
I asked you to trust me.
He finally answers my unspoken, silent demand that he continue. I do, but I don't need you keeping something from me because you think I need you to protect me from him. He can't hurt me.
even if he is the one behind the fires. He'll never touch me again. The confidence I'm starting to get used to rushes through my body. I can tell the second Clayton realizes that, while I trust him completely, I won't back down from this conversation.
Son of a bitch,
he grunts under his breath, studying my face before shaking his head and continuing.
I've had problems with him for a while, Caroline. A lot of those problems are ugly, and I wanted to spare you that shit.
What did you tell me about the ugly in our past, Clayton? I got you, and you got me. All of that stuff we've dealt with in our lives just helped us get to this point. So stop thinking I can't handle it, and let me show you how strong your love helped me become.
Fine,
he grinds out unhappily.
I've known John Lewis since his family moved to Pine Oak. He was a middle school punk then, as I'm sure you know, but his arrogance didn't turn dangerous until years later. I never liked him, but I didn't hate the man until more recent years. It started when Jess used him to attempt to make me jealous. Didn't bother me that she was carrying on with him, but him trying to pick a fight with me got real old real quick. He might have had a drinking problem when you left him, but he developed a drug problem on top of that when he came back to Pine Oak.
How long has he been back? I ask, unable to stop the chill that trickles down my spine just thinking about him being so close to where I've settled, even if he never made an attempt at making me aware of that. Just thinking about how easy it could have been for him to inflict pain on me makes my heart race.
Way I figure, right after you left him. Dates seem to match up.
I never knew.
Darling, he was so strung out, I don't think he knew which way was up, let alone that you were only a half hour, 45 minutes tops away.
Tell me the rest, Clayton. I can see all over your face that there's more. He runs his fingers through his hair, his naked chest flexing as he does.
He was supplying drugs to some of the newer hands here on the ranch back then. I busted him myself when I came back from a night ride, checking the property after a nasty storm, to find him in my fucking barn dealing. He was so high that he was even more reckless. He took off before the sheriff got here, but not before his strung-out ass took out a fence and killed two of my horses on his way out. He didn't even slow, Lenny. Blew right through them in his daddy's jacked-up truck. First time I've seen him since was that afternoon outside the diner in Wire Creek. I know he went to jail, heard rehab followed, but I'm not ready to eliminate him from the list of suspects who could be responsible for this just because he supposedly got help.
I shake my head, shocked by what he's telling me.
I should have told you. But after you confided how bad things were when you were with him, I didn't want you having more reasons to fear that man. Not when I had hoped to protect you from that.
You really think it's him? A tremor hits me, and I shiver, making Clayton push off the counter and walk over to me, pulling me from my seat and into his arms.
I don't know, darling, but I'm not going to assume it isn't.
He presses a kiss to the top of my head and tightens his soothing embrace.
I'm sorry I kept that from you, but I'd do it again if I felt like I could keep you from shaking like you are right now.
I shift closer and press my face against his chest. Clayton's scent fills my lungs and calms my racing thoughts. Thank you for telling me, honey. I don't like hearing it, you're right, but it makes me thankful I got out and got another chance at happiness. I'm not convinced it's him, but I'm also not convinced it isn't.
I'm not going to let anything happen to you. You know that, right?
Yeah, honey. If it's all the same to you, I'm going to hold off on starting the process of opening the sequel here in Pine Oak. I know Luke doesn't need help at Hazel's anymore, but I'm going to give him a call and see if I can work in the... I stop talking when I feel the man holding me growl, the sound in his chest vibrating against my cheek.
You ain't working in that bar, Caroline. I respect Luke and your friendship with him and Lucy, but I won't have you working in Hazel's when I know how rowdy that crowd is.
Luke won't let anything happen to me, honey.
Luke can't watch you and run that place at the same time. If you're worried about money, don't be. You never have to work another day in your life if you don't want to.
I untangle myself from his hold and narrow my eyes at him. I will not sit at home and do nothing while you bust your tail all day, Clayton Davis. I'm not an idle woman, but even if I were, I won't be like her. I poke him in the chest, the thought of his vile ex and how she just wanted to use him for his money, making me see red at his implication that I should be a kept woman and live off his hard work. He wraps his hand around my finger when I poke him one more time, and I almost melt into a puddle when he smiles that devastating grin of his.
Calm down, darling. You know damn well I don't think you're with me for my